This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
KPFT Houston. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Polinski.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Lavinka.
And Glenn Holt. And on tonight's show, there is a possible breakthrough in the treatment of HIV, and some reports go so far as to talk about a cure. What is this new development? We'll ask Paul Simons, the co-executive director of the Center for AIDS. Then Kelly McCann, the executive director of the AIDS Foundation, will be here to discuss events at the recent Global AIDS Conference. In the second hour, Ray Hill will discuss local community events, including a film called Citizen Provocateur, Ray Hill's Texas Prison Show. That film will be showing this coming Friday at 5 p.m. at Rice University as part of their Rice film series. And we'll have our regular syndicated features from This Way Out, including the latest GLBT news from NewsWrap. But first, to the studio and Kelly McCann.
No. First, we have to ask our listeners, who are loyal listeners, who followed us in the hour changes, to step up and contribute to KPFT. This is the only week we're going to be doing it in this cycle. We're going to be gone the next, we'll be back next week, but then the following 2 weeks we'll be gone because of the conventions. And none of us are going out there. But
we'll be listening on the radio just like everybody else.
Right. We're asking you to help support KPFT because it's very important. KPFT is a community-based, we're all volunteers here on Queer Voices, and we're asking you to call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
Well, one of the things is you know, anybody that's listening already knows how good KPFT is and what you get as far as programming here. But the important part is, you know, Queer Voices. We're one of the very few purely GLBT radio programs in the United States. And obviously, here in Houston, we try to give you all of the aspects of our community, plus a wide variety of other things, too. But like everybody else, this may not be a commercial station, but it all depends on your donations, your pledges to pay, and don't just pledge, pay, and we need that. This show needs that. You need to support us with your dollars as well as your listening, and we appreciate it.
I think it's very important that this is the GLBT radio show, that we as GLBT Houstonians show that we support this radio program. I know that they look at the numbers, they look at the time that people call in, so they can tell who's calling in, and, you know, we need to represent the GLBT community. Queer Voices has been here for a long time, and I want it to be here for a long time to come. 713-526-5738 is your number to call, 713-526-KPFT.
And if you're listening to us, you know, later on iTunes or downloading it from the archive sections, you can still call KPFT at any time at 526-5738 and say you're supporting Queer Voices and many of the other wonderful programs here. Everything from Democracy Now! To After Hours to some of the other great programming that's done all, you know, there's 168 hours in the week, and all the programming here in KPFT is very different, very good, and something you can't find anywhere else.
Well, I'm going to ask you to call in and donate, pledge your donation to Queer Voices. We're here for you. We take the time each week and during the week to set up interviews, to be here. We don't get paid for this. It's all volunteer. It's a labor of love. And I know, like everybody else, if you're enjoying the show, you want to keep it on the air, and that's what's important. And doing so, the way to do so, is to pledge. Call 713-526-5738. It's vitally important that you do.
There is a famous quote, show me the money. Well, show us the money. Call in and support our program. Then it's very easy. It doesn't take a lot of money, just a little bit here and there. Probably the cost of your coffee this morning, you know, once a month for, you know, the next couple of months. We'll do it. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. If you haven't checked out our website, kpft.org, I would very much like you to go check that out. It has a lot of information about the different programming, not only ours, but there's a lot of programming throughout the week. Also, we have the queervoices.org, a website about our program. And if you're a member of Facebook, we also have a new group that gives more information about our show. And I'm started to develop that, and I want to keep it local and kind of up to date with things that are coming up on the show so you can keep track and see that we do have good programming week to week on Queer Voices.
Okay, now we can get into our show.
All right. Okay. Last week, a report came out from CBS News, a very exciting report and very hopeful. They were talking about the V word, possibly, a vaccine for HIV. So we brought in one of our local gurus in the HIV community, Paul Simons from the Center for AIDS. Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hi, Brian.
So tell us what's the latest and greatest with this report and what's going on?
Well, actually, there were two developments, one out of a group at the University of Texas here in Houston and another out of a group at Texas Tech. And both are potentially important and hopeful, although I think some media outlets have overstated or mischaracterized the nature or the importance of the research, and they've used the C word. They've called it a cure, and these are not cures. So first, let me be clear about that. They're important developments. They may help us. Both of them may help us in our quest for a vaccine, and they may help us to improve our treatments, but they're not cures. So it's unfortunate when the media misstate medical developments because that plays on people's emotions.
Well, they have to do with sales and kind of gets the, you know, the people reading and listening on the radio.
I'm sure they have a commercial interest in what they do.
Okay, in layman's terms, can you explain what the local people here at UT came up
right.
with?
Right. So, one of the and perhaps the biggest obstacle that we have in either finding a vaccine or in developing effective treatments against HIV is that HIV is a very sloppy virus, and every time it makes copies of itself, it makes mistakes. So, lots of mutations, lots of errors.
Mm.
And one of the challenges over the years has been trying to find a portion of the virus that remains constant. And if we could find that, then we could develop a therapeutic that could lock onto that, or we could stimulate the immune system to produce antibodies that locked onto that. And the group at the University of Texas thinks they've done that. They think they found a region in HIV that does not mutate, that does not change, and if that's so, then that may help us to develop a vaccine or to improve treatment.
Why did it take so long? Why now? Is it just now coming out after 20-plus years of research?
Well, you know, we're talking here about work that is inherently difficult,
mm-hmm.
and it takes a long time to characterize what are essentially very tiny organisms and mm-hmm. to study them in great detail.
Does this have to do with the genetic mapping of the virus and that they're getting to the detail where they can identify these sections of the virus?
Well, here they think they found a section on the envelope of the virus.
Okay,
so sometimes when you see pictures of the virus, you see it has a sphere and it has these projections coming out of mm-hmm. it with little balls on them. And those projections are called GP120 or glycoprotein 120.
Vroom. Okay. That's going over my head.
Well, a long protein, a big right. protein,
right.
and they think they found a section of that protein that doesn't change.
So it's been called an Achilles heel, possibly.
Well, that might... you know, our bodies, for people who are infected with HIV, which is what you see when you go to get an HIV test, right, you come up HIV antibody positive.
Mm-hmm.
So our immune systems do produce antibodies against the virus. The problem is that the virus is constantly changing. So if we could synthetically having found an area of the virus that was constant, we might then be able to either induce the immune system to produce antibodies to that region, or we could do it synthetically. So that's the significance of the development.
So it's a hopeful development.
It is.
But I understand it's just animal testing and it hasn't proceeded to the human.
Both developments, the one at the UT and the one at Texas Tech, are both in the laboratory. Neither have been tried in humans. And that's an important cautionary note because we have in the past had what we thought were important developments that came from laboratory work that didn't pan out when you tried them in humans.
Okay, let's talk about the Texas Tech discovery. Now, this was a joint discovery with Harvard and Texas Tech.
Correct. And again, this development also has not yet been tried in humans. And basically what they have done there is to interfere with the work of three genes, two of them in the virus and one of them in human T cells, which are the target of HIV, and to disrupt their protein production so that the virus is not able to assemble new copies of itself. And this has this one probably more so than the U2 work. The U2 work has probably its greatest implication potentially is in development of a vaccine. The Texas Tech work, probably its greatest implication is improving therapeutics, improving our treatments. Mm-hmm. So because it might allow us to reduce the dose of medication that people take and therefore the side effects, and maybe even to reduce the dosing frequency. Perhaps people could go some amount of time without being on any treatment.
Less than once a day.
Correct.
Well, very good. I know our listeners, you know, would be very interested in that.
Oh, well, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, there are many advantages to that. Improved quality of life, perhaps a reduction in cost. And certainly if you can, anytime you can reduce the dose of a medication and still get the same effect, you'll probably reduce side effects as well.
Very good. I think it's very exciting that we're now even talking about a vaccine. I mean, just years ago, we weren't even talking about a vaccine. Now we're talking about possible links or leads to a vaccine. So I think that's very exciting.
Well, that's always been the holy grail of HIV research, because we will never really end this epidemic or push it back until we have a vaccine. Think about illnesses for which we do have vaccines. For example, hepatitis B. We have a vaccine for hepatitis B. If your listeners, particularly gay men, if you've not been vaccinated against hepatitis B, you ought to be vaccinated against hepatitis B. It's sexually transmissible, and every year in this country we get thousands of cases of it, even though we have a vaccine. So even with the vaccine, sometimes you don't get rid of things, but you can't even start down the path of dramatically reducing something like this until you have a vaccine. So the value of a vaccine is obvious.
Very good. You're listening to Paul Simmons. He's co-executive director of the Center for AIDS, and I'm Brian Levinka. Could you tell us a little bit about the Center for AIDS? I don't know if all of our listeners know what the Center for AIDS is and what does it do.
The Center for AIDS is a 501c3 nonprofit. It is funded mostly by contributions from individuals and from some corporate philanthropy. We are devoted locally in our education efforts. We're devoted to helping people with HIV infection understand and better manage their illness so that they can increase their longevity and improve the quality of life and have fewer illnesses or opportunistic infections associated with HIV.
Now, is this a place where people can go, or is it online? Or
it's both. So people can visit us at our information center at 1407 Hawthorne at the intersection of Hawthorne and UPON here in the Montrose, or they can visit us online at www.centerforaids.org.
Very good. And you said the magic word, 501c3, so that means that there are fundraisers involved.
There are, and your contributions are tax deductible.
Very good. And I think there are a couple of fundraisers coming up.
Well, we have a pool party, right, coming up, I think, that you're organizing.
Well, I'm trying to lead you into answering my question without – I'm actually organizing a pool party. It's it'll be Sunday, August 24th. From 2 to 6, it's a fundraiser. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll have a DJ. Food and drink. You can email me to get information, Brian2@pdq.net.
And it's only $10, right?
It's only $10.
Yeah.
But we're kind of using it as a way to kind of publicize the CFA and what we do and kind of, you know, branch out more to the GLBT community. So come out and, you know, enjoy a pool party and raise a little bit of money for the CFA.
And then there's another one after that,
oh,
the T for 200.
T for 200, that's our big fundraiser that we're trying to work on. It'll be October the 12th, again on Sunday. It's an afternoon thing. And our goal is to raise $30,000. So, you know, of course, that takes the bigger donations. And the pool party is a way to kind of advertise and kind of recruit those people that are, you know, willing to give a little bit more to the Center for AIDS and continue its mission and kind of enforce what the CFA does and in the community.
Right. And we appreciate it, too. We're grateful.
I wanted to ask a little bit about some of the work that the Center for AIDS does. It's sort of a rather unique organization.
It is.
It's based here in Houston. And is there any parallel organizations around the country? Or is my understanding that you really try to, you know, put together some of the information that is possibly way over a lot of our heads to be able for many people to be able to understand it.
Right. So we do try to take locally. We do try to take the scientific developments and translate them into layman's language so that they make sense to people. There are a couple of other organizations in the United States that do work similar to ours. The CFA, in some respects, is a hybrid of other models. In San Francisco, for example, there's Project Conform, which has been around since the early days of the epidemic. And in New York, there's Treatment Action Group. Project Inform is very much also focused, as we are, on educating people, and Treatment Action Group is focused on changing public policy or influencing public policy around HIV. And we try to do some of both. So locally, we try to be an education and information resource for people living with the virus. And then outside of Houston, we try to influence the HIV scientific research agenda through groups like the AIDS Clinical Trials Group, which is federally funded. It's the largest HIV research network in the world. I happen to serve on the community advisory board for that group, and that's the group that does so much of the research that you read about and does so much of the clinical research that influences the way that we treat and manage people with HIV.
I do think that the CFA is very unique in our community in Houston as kind of a one-stop shop for information,
right,
for the latest and greatest. You know?
So we try to be there for people. Just for example, today we had a young man come to us who just found out that he was HIV positive, and sometimes people don't know what they don't know, and they don't even know where to start, and they don't even know the basics. And so we try to be there for individuals like that, and also for individuals who have been living with the virus for a long time, and maybe they're ready to make a change in their treatment, or they have questions about their lab results or questions about something else that their doctor has told them. And so we try to help people know the questions that they ought to ask when they go to their doctor, and also to make sense of the answers that they've gotten.
You know, a lot of people are really intimidated, and I think in one way HIV has changed that a bit. But to be able to ask the questions, because you don't even know what questions to ask.
Right.
You know, and there are very good The Montrose Counseling Center, and the Legacy also does some basic work. But I think you guys are probably a little bit above that in looking at some of the research and studies that go on. Is there a lot of work being done here in Houston?
Actually, the medical center here in Houston is actively involved in HIV research. So there's something of a division of labor between the medical schools here. So the University of Texas, of course, has a medical school here on Fannin. And under the leadership of Dr. Roberto Arduino, a lot of HIV clinical research, so research involving human subjects, occurs through the University of Texas. And then on the Baylor side, we also have the Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, and they're actually one of, I think, about 20 of what are called CFARs, Centers for AIDS Research, that are funded by the federal government, and those are immunologists and virologists who are working in the laboratory, and Baylor is one of the 20 CFARs in the country where the what we call basic scientists are looking to make developments like this, to characterize the virus, to understand how it interacts with cells in the human body, to characterize the life cycle of HIV, and to look for areas where the virus might be vulnerable for purpose of developing either a vaccine or treatment.
And how did you come to the Center for AIDS, Paul?
Well, Actually, many years ago, we were founded by Joel Martinez,
yes.
who was an immigration lawyer, and Joel died a few years ago. And Joel and I worked together many years ago at what was then Montrose Clinic. Subsequently, it merged with another organization and is now Legacy Community Health Services. But back when it was Montrose Clinic, Joel and I worked there. By training, I'm a registered nurse, and so I was doing HIV clinical research there, working on actually one of the first protease inhibitors, Crixivan, which came from Merck. And Joel was our treatment advocate there. And Joel left that agency to start an agency that was exclusively devoted to HIV. And shortly after he did that, he asked me if I would come to work for him, and so that's how initially I came to be at the CFA. And, you know, it started out as a very small outfit. It was really started out as a one-man operation, and now we have, we run on an operating budget of about $500,000 a year, and we're governed by a 13-member board of directors that that are volunteers that come from the community. So it started a very small, and we're still pretty small. We only have 4 full-time staff members even now who are on the payroll. So it's still a small operation, but it's certainly grown from its early inception.
Do you train a lot of doctors?
Question.
We occasionally, what we will do is to hold forums for nurses and doctors where we will bring in speakers from the outside to make presentations. We do less of that now. In the early years, we used to do that all the time. And we do less of that now because as the epidemic has endured, there have been so many educational opportunities for physicians. You know, there are lots of them. And then also, there are so many demands that are put on the time of HIV physicians, which, by the way, are fixed and dwindling in number in our community, which is an issue of some concern to us, and we're looking at ways to redress that. But so every time, you know, you take doctors away to conferences or to meetings, you take them out of their practice. And so we've been doing less of that now than we used to do in the early years.
Well, there is a website if you're listening and you're interested in the Center for AIDS. Paul, what is that website?
It's www.centerforaids.org. And actually, last year we had about 250,000 visits to that site.
Really?
So, and you can find all of our publications. The center puts out 2 publications, and they're all available online in PDF format, as well as a number of fact sheets relating to different topics about HIV.
And again, where is the Center for AIDS?
We're at 1407 Hawthorne, at the intersection of Hawthorne at UPON, and the information center itself is open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
Well, thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you.
And just before we go to This Way Out news wrap, we'd like to remind you that we are in the fundraising cycle here at KPFT, and we're asking you to help support us, help support this station that supports the community. Where else could you talk about issues like this that are here on Queer Voices and many of the other radio shows that happen on KPFT? It's very important that you step up to the plate and help support us. It takes money to run this station. I mean, we have a lot of volunteers that do some really good programming, but and a small staff that is paid, but mostly it's volunteers that come in here, but our expenses of keeping the transmitter up, paying for the electricity at the transmitter, which you can just imagine what that is.
Crazy.
Yes, the studio here, and believe me, this is not the most luxurious studio, although we have the tools to do what we want to do. And, you know, the station's on 24 hours a day. We also do streaming. And in fact, now we're broadcasting in HD radio. And the second channel, if you have a HD radio, broadcast the BBC and some other programs that you can't get anywhere else. So we're asking you to support KPFT by calling us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
Because KPFT is non-commercial, it provides an opportunity for unique music, longer stories, and intriguing documentaries. Being non-commercial says more about the philosophy of community radio and the mission upon which it's founded, which is to provide a forum and debate that serves the community first rather than commercial interests. And because of this, KPFT also declared that it would get its funding from listeners. Radical 35 years ago, radical today. But it's working because listeners like you have come forward. Now Community Radio is one of the most trusted and listened to news services in the country. It's time for the next generation to inherit these values and choose to become a member. That's what these pledge drives are for. So just pick up the phone and call 713-526-5738 or pledge online at kpft.org. This is KPFT Houston.
This is Queer Voices.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 9th, 2008. There was a significant focus on HIV prevention among gay and bisexual men at the 17th International AIDS Conference in Mexico City this week, where about 22,000 people met for 6 days to discuss how to combat the global pandemic. During his remarks opening the conference, United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon warned that discrimination against men who have sex with men must end, noting that many countries fail to include that high-risk group in their prevention programs. According to the UN, more than a quarter of gay and bisexual men in Africa and the Caribbean are already infected, where gay sex is mostly illegal. Several predominantly Muslim countries in the Middle East also outlaw consensual adult same-gender sex. Peter Pio, the executive director of UNAIDS, the New York-based agency that coordinates care and research, told reporters that gay sex is underground in such countries, making it impossible to reach those men with prevention programs. Mexican President Felipe Calderón, former Botswana President Festus Mogae, and President of St. Kitts and Nevis Denzil Douglas each called for an end to discrimination against gay men during a news conference at the meeting.
India's health minister, Dr. Anbumani Rama Das, said his country's Penal Code Section 377, a remnant of British colonial rule that criminalizes carnal sex against the order of nature, should be repealed. A lawsuit challenging Section 377 is currently before the Delhi High Court. India's Home Ministry, which controls the police, has opposed repeal. But the health minister said during his speech at the conference that discrimination against those who are vulnerable to HIV, such as sex workers and men having sex with men, must be removed if our prevention, care, and treatment programs are to succeed. India is believed to have the greatest number of HIV/AIDS patients in the world, an estimated 2.5 million. Some 90% of the estimated 33 million people around the world who are infected with HIV live in developing countries.
But even in the U.S., new HIV infections among gay and bisexual men of all races have been increasing at alarming rates for nearly 2 decades, according to a new study by the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. Dr. Kevin Fenton, director of the CDC's National Center for HIV/AIDS, Viral Hepatitis, STD, and TB Prevention, told reporters during an August 2nd teleconference that data among men who have sex with men point to an urgent unmet need. U.S. activists have long criticized so-called abstinence-only sex education programs as ineffective and have demanded more funding for HIV prevention programs specifically targeting young people.
The Global Anglican Communion's once-a-decade Lambeth Conference also wrapped up this week with no resolution of the Church's internal struggles over the inclusion of lesbian gay people in religious life. It didn't help that traditionalists in the 77-million-member worldwide church consortium, primarily from Africa, Latin America, and Asia, boycotted the conference near London. They've been upset by the increasingly queer welcoming actions of North American Anglicans, sparked by the consecration of partnered openly gay New Hampshire Bishop Gene Robinson by the U.S. wing of Anglicanism, the Episcopal Church, in 2003. The blessing of same-gender couples during the past few years by some U.S. parishes, as well as by several Canadian Anglican congregations, has fueled the fire. Bishop Robinson was not formally invited to the Lambeth Conference by the Communion's spiritual leader, Archbishop of Canterbury Rowan Williams, ostensibly to avoid further upsetting traditionalists, but Robinson nevertheless generated considerable local media coverage at several fringe events he attended nearby. But because other queer-inclusive North American bishops would be there, more than 200 bishops of the 880 who were invited refused to attend Lambeth. Many of them met in Jerusalem in June to form what they called a church within a church, not formally breaking away from the communion, but establishing an autonomous consortium of like-minded Anglicans from among its 38 self-governing regions that opposed the ordination of women and openly gay clergy and the blessing of same-gender unions.
Unlike previous Lambeth gatherings where resolutions were passed, notably in 1998 where one declared that homosexual activity was incompatible with Scripture, some 650 bishops who did attend the conference met primarily in small groups. No formal debates or votes were held, nor any statements issued, including any addressing the contentious subjects of sexuality and gender. At a news conference on August 3rd, however, Archbishop Williams urged a halt to the further consecration of openly gay bishops, pointedly admonishing the Episcopalians. He also said the church would be in grave peril if the U.S. and Canadian branches didn't stop blessing same-gender couples. But Reuters reported that at least five dioceses in Canada that already perform those ceremonies would likely reject such a moratorium.
Traditionalists were further angered by revelations in two British newspapers late this week that Williams had written letters in 2000 and 2001 when he was the Archbishop of Wales supporting same-gender relationships, writing in one that faithful unions of such couples are comparable to marriage in the eyes of God. 19 bishops of the Church of England, from which Anglicanism grew around the world, quickly issued a statement defending Williams, praising his work to ease tensions since assuming his role as the communion's spiritual leader, and for putting church unity over what may still be his own personal beliefs. In the end, nothing was resolved at Lambeth, and there's been no word to date from the defecting bishops who boycotted the conference, but some observers applauded the fact that formal schism has thus far been avoided.
In other news this week, a record crowd estimated at 500,000 watched or floated, literally, as Amsterdam's 13th annual Pride Armada wound its way along the canals of the historic center of the city on August 2nd. Several national and local politicians were aboard some 80 boats for the first time, while others also carried the usual assortment of scantily clad revelers. Gay men from the Dutch Antilles and Suriname also took part for the first time.
Tens of thousands braved the rain in Brighton, England, also on August 2nd, for that city's Pride Parade. A decidedly damp collection of floats and marchers snaked through the streets towards Preston Park, where large crowds partied into the evening. Thousands also celebrated Pride in Belfast on the same day.
But an allegedly deranged man with a hammer put a damper on the August 3rd Pride celebration in Vancouver, British Columbia. He attacked nine people on a street crowded with revelers several hours after the annual parade, which attracted hundreds of thousands of people to the area. Most of those injured were treated at hospitals and released. Two were kept overnight, but their injuries were reported to be relatively minor. A 31-year-old man, whom police said has had several brushes with officers over the past couple of years, faces numerous charges, including assault causing bodily harm and possession of a prohibited weapon.
Three teenagers have also been arrested in the knife attacks against two gay men during last week's EuroPride celebration in Stockholm. The suspects, who were denied bail, have been charged with assault causing grievous bodily harm, robbery, and committing a hate crime. After the gay couple kissed outside a convenience store, they were knifed by the teens, who yelled homophobic epithets during the assaults. One of the two victims is still in the hospital, but is expected to recover. His partner was also hurt, but didn't require hospitalization. Two other men were beaten by three teens shouting anti-gay slurs earlier that week, but were not seriously injured. Their attackers were also arrested. The homophobic incidents didn't stop an estimated 450,000 people from enjoying the EuroPride capping Pride parade in Stockholm on August 2nd.
Elsewhere, lawyers for the U.S. Olympic Committee have forced the Northwest Bears, a gay men's social group, to change the name of its annual summer campout, according to a report in the Seattle, Washington newspaper, The Stranger. Attorney Carol Gross warned that the name Camp Kodiak 2008 Olympic Village violated the USOC's exclusive right to control all commercial use of Olympic imagery and terminology in the United States, and demanded that all such uses by the group end immediately. In a letter replying to Gross, Brendan McDonald, a member of the Bears group, expressed bewilderment, writing,
I was born in a small logging town on the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State at Olympic Memorial Hospital. My family and I enjoyed spending vacations at Olympic National Park, where our favorite spot was the Olympic Hot Springs. He talked about attending Olympic Community College, hiking in the Olympic Mountains, and living on Olympic Drive in Bellingham until I moved near Seattle, he wrote, where I enjoy having guests stay at its premier hotel, the Olympic Four Seasons. After assuring her that his group had removed all Olympic words or references from anything connected to their summer campout, he said, "We are 100% clean, and now you can check us off of your hit list."
And finally, the Federation of Gay Games, which organizes the quadrennial queer sporting event originally called the Gay Olympics until the USOC shot that name down, issued a press release this week saluting the 11 publicly lesbi gay Olympians now competing in Beijing. They include German lesbian athletes in cycling, soccer, and fencing, two U.S. lesbian softball players and a lesbian soccer player, Norwegian lesbian partners in life and handball, a Swedish lesbian soccer player, and a gay Australian diver and lesbian tennis player. The Federation also invited them to the 8th Quadrennial Gay Games in Cologne, Germany in late July 2010.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 9th, 2008, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
Don't look now, it's raining. Your time is gonna come. You're gonna rely on compassion from someone. If they could only find a cure. Friends of mine like Jim, I'll never see the light of him.
From their 1993 album Harmony Hotel, the Williams Brothers, and a cut called Don't Look Now. This is Queer Voices.
It's the creative use of sound to transport you from your home or car to a desert in the Middle East or the middle of a concert hall. It's refined radio for people who want to be engaged by stories and music, minus the shock value that commercial media often uses to try to get your attention. At KPFT, the bottom line isn't profit, it's public service. And that's why we're asking for your gift today, to help keep KPFT on the air. You can do that by giving a gift that reflects the value you receive from KPFT and that fits your budget. Our volunteers can help you decide when you call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-5738. You can also give on our secure website at kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
And before we continue our conversation on HIV/AIDS, we want to go out to the lobby and check to see if the phones are ringing out there. It sounds pretty quiet out there.
And what are we going to do about that, listeners? Let's get those. Let's call in.
Yes, we're asking you to call to help support this radio station and what we do on this radio station. It's a very special radio station. It is very important that you support us because we do the type of programming that's not heard anywhere else in Houston or in the entire region. KPFT is a community radio station, which means that community people actually come in and do programming. Where else is that available? On the air. It's available on the internet, but it's not available pretty much anywhere else.
Hey guys, this is Ron Reynolds. I'm out in Pledge Central. I'm the assistant news director here, and I'm taking calls. I do want to answer your question. A lot has been happening during your program, and we want to just take a moment to thank those who have called and have pledged their support, not only to KPFT, but also to support you, Jack Belinsky, and Queer Voices. First, we want to thank Jim for a $100 contribution, a very big contribution. Also, we want to thank David. He gave us a $25 donation, and Alexandra for a $25 donation. But I think the words of Alexander will go just as far as the pledge, and that is that he said he was a volunteer in Cambodia, and people there value free speech, and that he would listen to KPFT whenever he had the opportunity, and he wanted to call and give us a donation, which he has done today. So. But we want to continue to encourage people to pick up the phone and give us a call, 713-526-5738.
Great. And we hear the phone ringing. And
ring,
you know, like the old-fashioned phones that actually ring instead of buzz or make funny sounds like the cell phones do. So we want you to continue to do that. And if you're listening to us later on iTunes or downloading it via the archives, you can still call in at or go directly to the website, kpft.org, and you can donate via that way. It's important that you support all the different type of programming here on KPFT. And one more time, we're asking you to call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
All right, yeah, this is the GOBT program, and I don't hear any phones ringing out there, and I know there are plenty of people out there listening. I sent out a really big email to all my friends, so I know y'all are listening, and I know you have disposable income, so support something that supports the community. This is GOBT Radio, Queer Voices. Been around, what, 20, how many years?
Well, Queer Voices has been on the air since 1993, but before that there was a program called Wildenstein that started around 1975. The station went on the air in 1970, so almost the entire length of KPFT being on the air, there has been GLBT programming done by the community for the community.
So this is your community radio program. So support it. Support what we do. It's kind of a vote of confidence. You like what we like, what you hear. You like the programming that we do. Please support us. 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT. And, of course, the website, kpft.org, for your techies out there. They like to do it the new technological way. Go to the website, kpft.org.
Absolutely. And the one thing is that, you know, this program, as both Jack and Brian have said, that this is the GLBT program. Nowhere else on KPFT do you find a program like ours that exclusively is GLBT news. We're talking about AIDS tonight, looking into some of the things you may have heard on TV or radio somewhere else, but only here will you hear us talk about it in depth. And this program is the program for you. It's your community program. It is for KPFT, of course, but your pledge goes directly to our program, and it keeps us on the air. That's the important part. It'd be a shame that you were the one person who could have made the difference to keep us on the air, as well as KPFT, but Queer Voices. So I ask you, take a moment. You've got time. Pick up the phone. Call KPFT at 713-526-5738 and give whatever you can.
A recent study found that HIV infection in this country is 40% higher than estimate. Not only that, but this report has been kept under cover since last October. It was a front page story in the New York Times about a week ago, just before, and in fact, it sort of leaked out just before the conference that happened in Mexico City. With us this evening is Kelly McCann from the AIDS Foundation in Houston. And does this surprise you?
Surprise, probably.
Since you're
not
on the ground floor of what, you know, what's going on.
You know, honestly, two things. First of all, I'll comment about the timing of the release of this. No, that doesn't really surprise me at all. I think it was probably intentional and very well planned to draw as much attention as possible to this, and maybe at the same time even have some of it overshadowed by all the other events going on in Mexico City. But in terms of the actual data, I can't say that I am surprised. You know, those of us that work in the field certainly see high numbers of new clients year after year. And while we've had this report for now better than a decade that we're holding steady at 40,000 new cases each year, it didn't feel right. You know, I certainly didn't have any scientific evidence to back it up, but it didn't feel right. And so this feels a little more realistic. Now, you know, the scientists are claiming that it really is not that we're having any more infections than we already did. It's just refined laboratory techniques and investigational techniques. And I can buy that a little bit, Jack. I see you're looking a little skeptical there. I buy it a little bit just in terms of what, as I understand it, and please know, y'all, I am a CEO, not a biochemist, so forgive me, but it's my understanding that what they did, they refined these laboratory techniques so that they could actually partition out recent infections versus those that were longstanding. And from that, from this one study, found that 31% of the infections were actually recent. That feels pretty accurate to me. It's scary as can be, but it feels accurate, especially with some of the rates of infection you see in certain communities.
Well, the administration talks a lot about funding HIV outside this country, but we don't hear much about funding it within the country. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be funding it outside the country, but what about what's going on here? And more importantly, funding education.
You know, I have to agree with you that, yes, I was having a conversation earlier this evening about this. We are a global community, and I think being the richest and maybe most powerful country in the planet, it means that we do have a responsibility to act globally as well as locally. But I think that you're accurate in saying that we may not be seeing enough funding coming for local prevention or, you know, domestic prevention programs. There was an interesting symposium at the International Conference in Mexico City.
Now, you didn't go there. You
no,
weren't funded
I didn't.
To
I
go
sure,
there.
Yeah, yeah, I sure wish I could have gone.
And Brenda Wilson of NPR did some really good explanations about what was going on there, as in other reporters from NPR that went down there and talked about it.
And I was lucky enough. It's just one of these great opportunities that falls in my lap from time to time. But there was a Dr. Risha from India who was speaking on the art of living. It's a yoga technique. She was speaking at the international conference and actually arranged to stop by and visit me in Houston on her way back home. So I got a little bit of secondhand news, certainly no firsthand news, but I've, like so many people in my field and those of you in the news, I've followed this conference, and certainly the Kaiser Family Foundation's website's been my best friend recently. But one of the things that was very interesting that I think came out of this conference talked about, it was a symposium about the need for a new prevention strategy. And that goes into, I think, needing more money to fund these new prevention techniques or refine those that we already have so that they'll work better. But the idea was, it's so basic in its simplicity, but it's a complex issue. It's a matter of we need combination prevention just like we have combination therapy. Mm-hmm. We have to hit this epidemic at multiple places in its life cycle, if you will. Its socioeconomic, political life cycle. And so we've got to address political factors that allow for stigma and things like that to increase. And political factors like if it's a poor person's disease, it doesn't get as much funding. We've got to address educational factors and get real. We've got to talk in very plain terms about sexuality, sexual practices, destigmify or mystify those, and let's just be very honest, you know.
Well, and this whole thing about abstinence is, you know, that could be taught, but it shouldn't be the only thing being taught.
It is absolutely an appropriate part of a prevention message, but it is the whole message of we hope you will be abstinent. If you choose not to, let's show you how to protect yourselves. And let's also talk about you may engage in anal sex. You know, things that make people very uncomfortable to discuss have got to become more regular topics of conversation. And then I think we also have to address, and this is what the symposium talked about too, we've got to address in a rational way drug abuse. And that means needle exchange programs, bottom line. And so we've got a lot of work to do before we can get to where we need to be with a comprehensive sort of combination prevention. But I think maybe we'll see these new numbers fueling some interest in improving our prevention techniques. Maybe we'll see this as our launching pad.
Kelly, how are the rates in Houston coming? The infection rate in Houston, how is that happening, or what's going on with that?
You know, the one thing that I can tell you is that I don't believe in Houston there's been a study similar to this where you've looked at the recent versus long-term infection. So we can't do a direct comparison. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the number of cases, Houston seems to be about on par with the nation in terms of the groups that are being most directly and severely impacted, African-American women and men who have sex with men. Mm-hmm. We certainly show those trends. But, you know, the good news is over the last couple of years, there's actually been a slight reduction in the number of reported HIV cases in Houston. Now, what we don't know is that a true reduction, or is it not enough of the right people have been tested? So it's always a bit of a guessing game and an estimate. But I have to say, I think Houston is ranking right up there among the top 10 cities in terms of the number of new infections.
Absolutely.
So what do we do? You know, what do we do? We've been talking about this for 20-some years, and still the message isn't getting out. And there isn't necessarily the money all the time to get that message out.
And certain things, too, like for years and years, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention funded activities like outreach at the bars with handing out condoms. And, you know, maybe that is not the only type of intervention that's needed, but it's one last-ditch chance to get a condom in somebody's hand before they go home with somebody. But now the CDC really doesn't want to fund those type of interventions. It has to be a scientifically proven, usually multi-session intervention. And what I think is we've got to really go back to a multi-pronged sort of approach. Let's do the old-fashioned outreach. Let's do the general classes for teaching everyone how to avoid HIV. But then let's also do targeted education for groups that are having higher levels of infection, like African-American women and men who have sex with men. Let's really talk in real terms with young people. And that means we've got to get the schools and the school districts to change their puritanical attitudes about sex education. Just let me share this with you real quick. I have a colleague at work who told me that her son, sixth grade or seventh grade, had recently come home last year came home from school about his sex ed class and said, "Mom, it's the weirdest thing. We spent an hour talking about sex and never once talked about actual sex." So, you know, it's we do this dance around things, and I think we have to stop that because lives are at stake here.
And what is the role of the AIDS Foundation in this whole puzzle?
Well, you know, as a service provider who receives a good deal of federal money, we have to be very careful. I'm not in a position to lobby as CEO of an organization or for my organization to lobby, but I certainly encourage everyone as a private citizen to communicate their desires to their legislators, to their local school boards. If you don't think that they're addressing things in the correct way, please let them know, because without your voice, change is going to happen very slowly, if at all. But then in terms of AIDS Foundation Houston, what we do, we are actually out there providing prevention. And I'll be honest, even though it's not a funded intervention anymore, I still have staff members at the bars, because we believe that that is at least something we should be doing, even if the CDC doesn't want to pay us to do it anymore. But then we have preventions that are designed specifically for certain groups. We continually try to get our message out, even through our large events like the AIDS Walk. So we have a huge role in trying to get the prevention message out. But, you know, after 26 years of being in existence, we are always looking for newer and more innovative and more effective ways to do it.
And has some of that come out of the conference? And you know, as being a world conference, there's also countries that are not quite as, have learned the lessons that we have in this country.
You know, I think you're exactly right. The real benefit, I mean, everyone learns something at an international conference like this, but I think a lot of your resource-poor countries who often don't have the infrastructure in place, they learn a lot about techniques that are working in other parts of the world that they might be able to tweak, tailor to their needs. But, you know, one of the things that I think was discussed pretty significantly at this conference was biomedical interventions and some of the work that they're doing in other countries with spermicides and you know, the jellies and those kinds of things. And I think it's going to be adding those to behavioral interventions, to maybe someday a vaccine. And then when we have that full buffet, then we're going to see maybe some significant
decreases. And a vaccine may only prevent people from getting HIV and not necessarily. We don't know. We don't know what it's going to do.
And even if it only helps or is only effective in 50% of the people, that still would bring drastic impact.
Yes. So, as long as we don't let down the guard and still realize that it's not over. And the fact that people are living longer and better is sort of a little bit counterproductive about people using condoms.
Yes,
and also we're dealing with, you know, people, it's changed. The bars aren't quite what they used to be in the community. We have the internet, so we don't necessarily go to the bars like we used to.
And that is where some scientists suspect that a lot of the new infections are coming from, that very method of meeting and then, you know, having that anonymous sort of liaison where there isn't that opportunity for my outreach worker to hand you a condom on your way out the door. So the internet is now the bathhouses of yesterday, and it's just too widely dispersed to help. Now, well, I have to give a shout out and a heads up for people to know that Legacy, they are doing a program for online, you know, outreach, and it's the core CyberCore program, and that's a great program. It's been around for several years. As a matter of fact, AFH, we even funded it for 3 years, and you know, it's one way to try and reach into that particular type of way that people are meeting, but still, even with that, we're just scratching the surface.
Do the Houston organizations work together?
You know, it depends on the organizations and it depends on the project, but on the whole, I think, like, for example, the recent Hip Hop for HIV concert that happened in the summer, that was the City of Houston's Health Department working with Planned Parenthood and AFH and Be Busy and several other smaller organizations. organizations. Absolutely. And then, of course, like AIDS Foundation Houston, if we have a client that comes in needing food or housing, we don't provide medical. We provide those other basic needs. So if you need to go to the clinic, we have connections and easy referrals if you want to go to Legacy or St. Hope or Thomas Street. So there's a definite referral network that we all work together to serve our clients the best that we can.
There is a community for the World AIDS Day, Houston, that's kind of bringing all of the AIDS service organizations together, and even the third party, like the Bunnies on the Bayou, the BCBC, to work together for World AIDS Day. So that's kind of been a cohesive force in our community. And I know that AFH is well known for a fundraiser that you do then. Can you talk about
Thank
that?
Thank you, yes. One of our main fundraisers each year is our World AIDS Day luncheon held on December 1st. This year it will be at the Corinthian downtown, catered by Jackson Hicks. And our chairs for the event, we're very excited, are Holly Moore, who's the editor, and Jim Castleman, the publisher of Paper City. So it's going to be a great event. It's a way for us to raise awareness about HIV and also say thank you to people in the community who have done a lot to bring attention to the issue and raise some pretty significant funds for fighting HIV and AIDS and serving those who are living with it. Mm-hmm. You know, one other thing before, because I know we're wrapping up soon, aren't we? I don't know. I just want to say y'all had me going so well before we started the show when you were talking about the need for public radio and people's support. So I have a donation.
Oh, my
God. I
wanted
just to make sure.
Thank you.
You know,
okay, for those at home.
I would encourage all the listeners to please donate what you can. It is so important that we have this voice of reason in Houston.
For those at home, Kelly has just pulled out a very large bill and put it on the table, donating it to KPFT. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for what y'all do.
And it's also very important that, you know, in a way, our newspapers are sort of falling apart across the country. The Internet's sort of killing them in a sense. And not that all of our newspapers are the greatest thing in the world, but it does take money to report news. More importantly, it takes people responsible to be able to give the different viewpoints, which doesn't always happen on the media. And, of course, we're, you know, we won't mention names like KTRH, which used to be a fabulous radio station, or at least a good radio station, and to bring the viewpoints, or KPRC radio, that you know, talk about the different issues. We do. Sometimes we're not as funded as well as those stations, but we really appreciate it, and we really try to work with the nonprofits and the sort of the heroes in the community that do all the work and help make this a better place to live.
Well, and I, you know, as somebody who works in the HIV field, I can say that KPFT has consistently for decades allowed us a forum to come and talk about issues that are important to the community and important in our field. And so you definitely have a friend in me and a friend
well,
at AIDS
and
Foundation
not to sound
Houston.
A little bit too self-important, but we were actually around when the formation of the AIDS Foundation, the KS
AIDS Foundation, that is exactly right,
we started that. We helped get the word out about those organizational meetings that happened at the Sheraton downtown. And Bill Scott came on this show at one time when it was called Wallenstein, and we did one of the first safer sex programs anywhere, and being able to talk about the way people talk, you know, about preventage. And he was one of my favorite guests, and he, of course, is no longer with us. But he was one of the heroes of this community that talked about it, and we've been very lucky over the years to be able to talk about all these different things and some of the great things that do the AIDS Walk. I mean, Houston was not the easiest city to start the AIDS Walk in.
That is true.
Yeah.
You know, you do fight a lot of that very Southern, very Republican sort of base here. However, I think that the gay community here was so supportive and so action-oriented in those early days that it might have just been a few hundred people that first, probably like 300 people that first year, largely members of the gay community, but they helped to plant that seed that has grown. And I want you to know, MAC Cosmetics, not to plug any particular brand, but MAC Cosmetics is so good to AIDS service organizations through their MAC AIDS Fund. They just matched whatever their team raised for our AIDS Walk this year, and we just got a check for 18 $7,000 today.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so MAC Cosmetics and places like that have come on board, I think in large part because of the way that AIDS impacted their industry. And so, you know, really, this is the whole AIDS service movement and the AIDS awareness movement, it rides on the shoulders of the gay community.
And you're listening to KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station, based here in Houston. And we're asking you to please call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Kelly, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks.
And you want to quickly mention some of the things that are coming up?
I would just like to remind everyone about a couple of things we've got coming up. Thanks to the Society for the Performing Arts, we're going to be the recipient of proceeds of the David Sedaris show that's coming.
Oh, he's fabulous.
He's wonderful. That's October 23rd.
And let's not forget that David Sedaris started in public radio.
That is a great segue. I didn't know that. He's hilarious. He's brilliantly witty. And then we also are starting our Mercurio series on October the 3rd at the Rothko Chapel. So we'd love to have people come and join us for a night of AIDS awareness and beautiful classical music.
And what's that website?
Thank you for the plug. It is www.aidshelp.org. Aidshelp.org.
Very good.
And you're listening to KPFT Houston. And what do we have coming up, Glenn?
We have Ray Hill coming up to talk about a film which features himself.
Well, let's go out to the lobby one more time and see how the phones are ringing and what's going on out there.
Yeah, well, guys, we have had the phones ring a few times during this program. Susan. $200. She used
Thank
a fantastic
you,
plastic, put it on her Amex card.
That's the way to do it.
Yep. And we also want to thank Wayne for a $60 donation. So the calls have definitely been coming in throughout this hour, and many people have contributed.
And as soon as Kelly leaves the studio here, she'll be handing over a very generous donation. We really appreciate it.
Thanks
can't
for
wait
what
to
you
get
do.
You're listening to KPFT, and I think we have do we have another piece of music coming up, Glenn? As soon as he's trying to reach over, we really appreciate your support here at KPFT.
Did you leave me?
1983. Yeah, 1983. That was Sylvester from an album called Call Me, and the title of the track, Band of Gold. This is Queer Voices.
Well, I just love how you're able to pull that music out like
that's
that.
That's great bump stuff. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm actually old enough that I can remember the original, but Brian isn't.
I was alive when that was out.
Yeah, you don't remember.
I was learning cursive and alphabet.
You were going, ba, 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 ba.
I was watching Sesame Street.
Uh-huh.
No. Well, with us this evening is Ray Hill, who's going to be... Do you have anything to promote tonight?
Well, I've always got things to promote. I mean, that's the nature of having me around the station. But right now, I would like to call your audience's attention to the fact that if we had been keeping archives of Waldenstein and Gay and Lesbian Voices and Queer Voices for all these years, the oral history of the gay, lesbian, transgendered, and bisexual movement would be recorded in those archives.
Yes, we have some of those shows, but we don't have an awful lot of them.
We don't have all of them. And the fact of the matter is, KPFT had a very early, even for Pacifica Foundation, gay shows. There were irregularly scheduled gay shows at WBAI as early as the mid-60s, but beginning in 1970, 75, there was a previous show to that in the 72-73 era. And then in 75, when I got out of prison, then we started having regular every week shows. And that continued almost unbroken until today. I mean, there have been minor hiccups, but
yes.
It's almost unbroken.
Yes. Well, we got canceled. Waldenstein got canceled in late 92. But in the interim, After Hours was still going
sure.
on.
So we've had significant. And why is that important? Well, it's important because as you go about the business of organizing for a struggle toward equality, the most important thing in the world is that you bring the members of the community with you. Now, when I say community, we know exactly what I'm talking about now. Well, we didn't always do that. Until 1977, the term gay community meant the part of town where the bars were. And then on June the 16th, 1977, that changed to a group of people with common goals and aspirations. And I was in a leadership organizing role in 1977. And I realized that we didn't have any institutions to sustain a community. We had bars, and bars can be used to sustain a movement, a community. I mean, the American Revolution was organized in bars. They were called taverns, and they weren't like our bars at all. They were places where people went and had a few moderate drinks. But the real signers of the Declaration of Independence were a bunch of rum runners and people running from the law because of liquor.
Well, it was rich white men.
And they were drunk men.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the alcohol consumption of the people on this continent, at that time we took a lot more liquor than we do now because the water wasn't good, so liquor was safer.
Right. Right.
And so we, but this nation's independence, well, and the point to take there is do-gooder liberals from England didn't come over and say, oh, poor babies, we'd like for you to have a little independence. That isn't how that worked. These drunks got together and declared their independence, and then they defended it, and fortunately for them, they won. And so after that, well, this became an independent nation. Same thing's going to happen to every movement. Is the movement doesn't depend on anybody else giving you equality or liberty or justice or any of those other wonderful things. You declare them, you own them, and then you defend them. And so I never, as an activist leader in this community, never gave a tinker's damn about what straight people thought about us. I only cared what we thought about ourselves.
Well, and that was definitely, it's still somewhat of a problem, internal homophobia.
Oh, absolutely. It's enormous. It is an enormous problem. A bunch of youngsters in this room do not remember that the major characteristic of gay, lesbian, trans, especially transgender people, is I'm broke, feel sorry for me. Meaning I'm broken. I'm not a whole human being. I want your pity. Well, you don't get much pity in this cold, cruel world. What you need is some dignity and some pride, and you demand the equality that you have due.
Everybody should watch Boys in the Band. It's a great movie to be able to understand where we were coming from.
What the 1960s was like. Yeah, it really is. It's you know, I shudder at it, because even when it was produced the first time around, I said, oh my God, is that us? And in fact, it was us. But all through all of that, everything, I mean, I've written a screenplay about my experience as a teenage Baptist evangelist. And so the production people called me and said, look, we need you to write a love story into the plot. And I said, what do you mean? You're talking about teenagers in the 1950s. Well, you're talking about teenagers, so you must be talking about some kind of puppy love syndrome. And you're talking about the 50s. No gay teenager in the 50s would have had a concept of an enduring gay relationship.
Sure.
There were no role models. There was nothing written. Christopher Isherwood, who's one of the most sophisticated people on the planet, had such an idea. But even the relationship between Oscar Wilde and Bossy was such that it wasn't of an enduring nature. So nobody would have thought about a love story as we think of life. I said, no, and I'm not going to write a 1990s love story into a 1950s story. I mean, I'm not going to get out of period. And I'm not going to get out of the age of my characters. And so I can write about the confusion. Because certainly the feelings were there. Certainly we experienced feelings of emotional attraction to people that would have resulted in an enduring relationship if we had thought that was possible. But I can only write about the confusion because it was unresolved confusion. Now, as we talk about our history, and you're sitting out there listening, we do that because this is pledge time at KPFT. And pledge time at KPFT means that the listeners who are the sponsors of this radio station call in, commit. Now, you can do that and you get goodies. You can get trinkets. You can get a bag so you don't have to clutter up the landfills.
We
with
don't have the Nina
bags.
Toten bag.
We don't have any Toten
we
bag.
We don't have the Nina Toten bag.
No, we don't have the Nina Toten bag. There's a lot of things we don't have. But you can join this radio station and get T-shirts and all of that stuff. I, in my programming, and I'm one of the founders of this radio station, never pitch that stuff. Because I think the station deserves your support for the clarity of our message. Nobody has told the staff of Queer Voices what they can and can't say. They come in here and they sacrifice. By the way, all of the voices you hear on this radio station are volunteers. Nobody's making any money.
With the exception of the news department.
Well, in the news department, and by news standards, they're volunteers.
Exactly. although they do something rather strange. They do local news.
They do local news. But yeah, every one of them could get paid a lot more running errands over at Channel 11 than they are going to get over at KPFT working. So the situation is that they're sacrificially giving of their talents and abilities. I know because I do news programming on KPFT. Every time there's an execution, I do an hour show about executions. And I've got one to do Tuesday and one to do Thursday of this week.
And I was on the news on Friday.
Yes.
Talking about the endorsements.
Right. And they're up to it and they're doing it. This station needs and deserves your, if it's important, tax deductible I don't know if I've ever gotten a dime that was tax deductibility was important. But I get money for the radio station lots of different ways and all the time. But we need for you to use the system as it works best. And that's pick up the telephone, call 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Now, they're raising money on that number here because this is the Queer Voices show. Friday night, we'll raise money on a different telephone number because we use those lines for families of inmates to call in. That number is known all over the world. On Friday night, people who have never heard this radio station go to the phone and dial it over and over and over again, hoping to get in.
Almost like your phone number.
Yeah, it really is. Oh. It really is. At one time, 523-6969 sat on a desk in this building. I was manager, and Fred Pines was around, and that was a different era. We've gone through lots of different eras. And we have been there for this community. You know, I was the first openly gay general manager of a broadcast facility in the United States.
Wasn't there a question about that? Whether
Absolutely.
A gay person could serve as
Absolutely.
A...
Well, I was, and I had on two points. And I was that ex-convict and a gay person. And they said, oh, no, you can't do that. It takes a person of good moral character. And I said, well, okay. What does that mean? And so the lawyer started scratching her head. And I said, look. Write the FCC and tell them that we are not in compliance. And they said, okay. And then FCC wrote back and said, oh, well, we'll put it before the commission the next meeting. And so the lawyers called back and said, now we've got to go make a presentation. I said, no, we don't. Why would we go give them something to argue with? Thank them for their invitation and don't go. So we thanked them for their invitation. And Aaron Fox Plotner and Grumblund, a bunch of munchkins, munchkin lawyers, decided that they would not go on that issue. They were there on other issues, but they were not there on that issue.
They certainly had plenty of things to go in front of the FCC about.
Right, and the FCC, because they're FCC lawyers.
And the original concept of Pacifica wasn't necessarily something that the FCC wanted.
No.
They didn't want a community organization running a radio station. They thought it was either supposed to be commercial or maybe owned by a university.
Right.
They or did maybe not, a city. They,
well,
maybe
I mean,
city.
I mean, Lou Hill literally invented non-commercial media.
Yes.
Lou Hill invented. He's no relation to me, but he's a smart fellow. He invented non-commercial media in Berkeley, California, in 1949.
And in fact, they were a little bit upset when they got their license because it was on FM.
Yeah.
They wanted.
And nobody had FM stations.
Right.
Nobody had FM radios.
And that
doesn't that sound familiar today with HD?
Yes. Yes. Well, and because originally. The FM band, when they started to set it up and make rules on it, they set aside 88 to 92 for non-commercial. Mm-hmm. But our New York station and our Berkeley station are in the commercial area
right.
of the band.
That's right. And they were given the Pacifica Foundation. Berkeley precedes the
yes.
set aside.
That's a mothership.
And then New York was given the station. And those frequencies are worth millions and millions
yes.
and millions of dollars.
Yes, yes.
But the fact of the matter is we're still doing non-commercial media on that. We're doing very valuable radio because we have freedom to do radio differently from other people. And the reason we have that freedom is you. The number is 526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. If you spell better than you count, it's 713-JAM, J-A-E-M-K-P-F-T. But if you count better than you spell, of course, it's 713-526-5738. I'm Ray Hill, and I'm one of the co-founders of this radio station. And I am the only co-founder still left in this community. And there were four of us. Two of us were gay. Larry Lee was gay but closeted. Don Gardner, with whom he was in love, was our music guy. Larry had been the former editor of the Daily Texan in Austin. And our fourth party was Deborah Danberg.
Wow.
Deborah Danberg. Those are the four people who founded this radio
station.
Well,
Deborah's not too far away. She's in Galveston.
Not right now. She's in the Austin area.
No.
But she's on short leave from Galveston. But Deborah and I stay in touch. I haven't talked to her in a couple of weeks, but I talked to Bob last week. He's holding down the house in Galveston that they built, that was built shortly after the flood. And so that's... that's a commemorative kind of thing, and she's happy there, and we need to remember Deborah Denberg, if by no other means than by the sustenance of this radio station. Remarkable woman. I was talking with a politician today. The fact that when the endorsement card is printed, people can carry it into the polling place and use it to vote from was a bill created by Deborah Denberg when she was chair of the Elections Committee of the Texas House.
And that's a good thing because the card's going to be rather big this time.
It can be big this time. Take it in, use it. And let me tell you something. As a co-founder of the caucus and a co-founder of this radio station, we're not political here, but I am strongly, not on behalf of the radio station, but on behalf of Ray Hill, recommend that you follow the caucus endorsements to the letter. Follow that card. That card will continue to prove our discipline as voters. And right now, that makes us very important on the Houston political scene. There are sufficient gay people out there. Now, listen, some of you folks are well enough fixed that you can pass the goal. Do you know what your goal is tonight?
No, I don't even know what our goal is tonight. And they're trying to do more of a quiet campaign this
time. Whatever the goal is.
Which doesn't work very well with
whatever.
Quiet
the,
and
yeah,
Ray Hill.
Yeah,
mm.
Somebody said that they thought that I would sit up at my funeral and give a speech. And I said, no, actually, nobody's going to speak at my funeral. It'll be the only time when I've been in a room and there has been silence. but the trick is that some of you listening to this program right now, who may or may not be gay, but certainly can support the principle of KPFT, can pick up the telephone, 713-526-5738, and make a substantial gift to this radio station. If it is important to you, we're a 501c3 tax-deductible organization, and if that's important to you, you know what that means. And you can reduce your taxes by taking advantage of that tax deductible status. We're always glad to accommodate your accountant and whatever he or she might need. But we have nurtured an institution here that has given voice to the voiceless. You have no idea what it was like to do gay programming in 1975. People used to hide in their closets and listen to the radio station. People used to go out and sit in their cars and listen to the radio station because they didn't want their family to know what they were doing. And now the sin that dare not speak his name will no longer shut up. I mean, times have just changed. We've got perfectly straight kids telling their parents they're gay just to upset their parents. And then waking up the next morning and said, oh, well, how do I do this? I hadn't thought about that part. But that's right. Society has changed. Brokeback Mountain gave straight men permission to get screwed and enjoy it. You have no idea what cultural changes have come about.
And Transamerica.
Which used to really hide in total fear and horror, is now pouring out into our face and making a significant difference in various areas of our society. You know, I was talking to the Futures meeting the other day, and I said, what we really need to do is have a uniformed police officer, man or woman or trans person, as our grand marshal in the parade. It's time to make that statement.
That would be.
That would wake things up a little bit.
Get a lot of attention.
Right, get an absolute lot of attention and show people that while other people still suffer prejudices and narrowness of mind, we have overcome all of that.
Well, Ray, let's talk a little bit about your film festival.
Well, beginning next Friday at 5 o'clock, we're going to show a documentary at Rice Media Center, a documentary on the prison show. It's called Citizen Provocateur Ray Hill's The Prison Show. And that's about the obvious. And then at 7:30, we're going to show another film. It's called Beating the Odds, the Marilyn Gambrell story. And that is the family issues related to criminal justice, because everybody in prison has families. and families are affected. And My Prison Show is a forum for families to communicate. And the Marilyn Gambrell story is a story of a woman who has nurtured the leftover kids whose parents, either their single parents or both of their parents, are in prison. And that is a very compelling story. Saturday, beginning at 2 in the afternoon, we're going to show a film called Tulia, which is about the West Texas town where the cop lied.
Tom Coleman.
Yeah, right. Coleman lied and sent the whole black community to prison. And now he is locked up, and they are all free, being well paid for the inconvenience of being falsely convicted.
You know, just a quick point. There was a story this morning on the radio talking about how a lot of these people that are falsely convicted and then were released actually sometimes get less support than people that went through the whole system, who were convicted.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. Because a lot of states do not have any type of...
Right. Texas, thanks to Rodney Ellis, has laws that compensate wrongfully convicted people. But you see, you have to have somebody like Rodney Ellis. You have to have somebody like John Whitmire. You have to have somebody like Deborah Danberg to pass those laws and make them happen. Mickey Leland used to carry the legislation to decriminalize homosexuals by the repeal of 2106. He carried it alone. I mean, in times when he would only get three or four votes on the floor of the House, he would stand there and proudly argue the case. You know, that history is not to be forgotten. The closeness of Mickey Leland to this community, the closeness of Barbara Jordan to this community, people do not realize that's our history, and that will be found in the archives. Sunday we're going to do What Happens in Prison. And so it's 3 days of films, 8 films, 3 days. If you want more information, you go to my website, which is theprisonshow.org. Open the small Rock the Lockup logo, and there's the lineup.
It looks like a really good lineup of films.
Well, it was so impressive. The Houston Museum of Fine Arts first complained that we did not choose them for a venue and then said that they were going to send the information to their mailing list because they like the lineup. And if it works in Houston, we're going to carry it to Dallas and Austin, San Antonio, carry it around the state. It is specifically a Texana kind of show. But the whole idea is to launch a movement. And let me tell you that the whole idea is to convince convicts, ex-convicts, and their families that nobody's going to do our movement either. This is like gay people 40 years ago. You couldn't tell gay people that they had the ability to seek their equality. They didn't believe you. There was a long time when I couldn't get a drink in a gay bar because I was the homosexual that was going to get all us queers in trouble.
And now you don't drink.
And I never did drink. I never did drink. And that was the thing. I couldn't buy Coca-Cola in there. But the deal is that it is the people affected themselves that are responsible for their freedom, and those people are going to get it. We now know that as gay, lesbian, transgendered people, because that has worked for us. That has worked for us. And so there's another group of people who are pushed around by their guilt and their shame and their social oppression, and I want to make it work for them. I'm not going to live long enough to see it, but I will live long enough to see it begin. And you will, most of you, live long enough to see it. I want to say this. No matter what your station in life, no matter where you are on the coming out and the full development of yourself as a human being, contributing to yourself, your family, and this society, I don't care where you are on that, this radio station and this program is here for you. Many of you have got a long way to go before you can be comfortable being out and doing what it is needed to do. You can anonymously give to KPF. The anonymous family is one of our biggest contributors. But you've got to call that phone, and you've got to make that pledge. You can put it on credit card if you want to. You can just pledge it, and we'll figure it out. You can do payment plans, any combination to make it work. But this radio program, these volunteers in this radio station, doing this program right now need and deserve your support for the important work that they are doing. To participate, call 713-526-5738. If the line is busy, don't worry about it. Just keep on calling. And you'll get through.
Ray,
and
we're going to have to go to This Way Out in a little while, but wasn't there something else you wanted to cover this evening?
Well, just briefly, there is a young Hispanic man somewhere in his mid-20s to mid-30s that is attractive enough for people to be seduced into his car. He's carrying people to Fort Bend County, holding them incommunicado, using them basically as sex slaves. We have four victims. Since they got in the car willingly, it's not a kidnapping situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a false imprisonment situation, because the law kind of implies that somebody's got to be a law enforcement officer or impersonate a law enforcement officer. The deal is that be careful who you get in the car with. If there are other victims that are not reported out there, call me at home, 713-523-6969. I need to connect you up with the chief detective out of Fort Bend County Sheriff's Department, who's doing an extensive investigation into this. So talk it up among your friends. Everybody be careful. Look out for one another's safety. And that was in this week's Gab. It will be in the next issue of Outsmart. But be careful. There are still crazy people out there, and we don't want the evidence that results in the charge of this person to be a shallow grave.
Ray Hill, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Three shining stars coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Meet three gay Olympic champions. First is the legendary diver Greg Louganis, who earned a silver medal in 1976, two gold medals in 1984, and two gold medals again in 1988. He publicly came out at the 1994 Gay Games in New York. Next is Canadian-born Mark Tewksbury, who in 1992 swam his way to Olympic gold in the 100-meter backstroke. He believed that coming out to his coach was part of his winning formula, since it gave him a kind of peace and empowerment that comes when you just stop fighting who you are. Lastly is Tom Waddell, who in 1968 had an impressive sixth-place finish in the decathlon. In the early 1980s, he founded the Gay Games, which remains one of the largest sports events on the globe. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
Does Dolly Parton have the power to drive gay men straight? You'll hear a playwright's opinion later in the program. Running with Scissors author Augustine Burroughs is dining with a wolf in his latest offering. This Way Out queer lit commentator Janet Mason couldn't wait to hunt the book down.
I have to admit to snapping up certain authors' books like Literary Prozac, something that puts me not in touch with my emotions but keeps me away from them, preferably snickering page after page. Augustine Burroughs is one of these authors. And he is the first to admit it, making such statements as, "When people see my book on a table in a bookstore, they tend to pick it up and smirk." I heard him say this recently on his author tour. He was wearing his black leather jacket and taking the stage in stride, pacing rapidly as he talked about the rock star-studded soundtrack to the MP3 version of his latest book, A Wolf at the Table, a memoir of my father, St. Martin's Press, 2008. And then he broke the news. It's not funny. Not funny? Could this be the same Augustine Burroughs of the memoir-made movie Running with Scissors? And the Augustine of his essay collections, Magical Thinking, by far his best, and Possible Side Effects, in which he proves again that he is not afraid to have something slicing to say about any and everyone? The fact is that Augustine's subject matter has often been grim. He has just, until this point, managed to make a joke about everything, And while his latest memoir, A Wolf at the Table, is not hysterical, the writing is Augustin at his best, clever, contained, and courageous. It's easy for authors to get pigeonholed, to be rewarded for writing one book after another that is similar enough to appeal to an already established audience. It is to Augustine's credit that he took the risk of writing something different, and in doing so, revealing a vulnerable side of himself. The reader is introduced to Augustine the child with curly blonde hair, who even at 12 was often mistaken for a girl. The wolf at the table is his father. This memoir is Augustine's creation story. He listens intently as his father talks about his own childhood, in which he was alternatively abandoned, tended to by doting female relatives, and then taken back by his own abusive father. Augustine also listens to his mother as she talks about how she met Augustine's father, adding with a wave of her paintbrush that this was, of course, before she knew that this man would become Augustine's father. As much as this book is about memory, it is more pointedly about the absence of memory. The book opens with a scene of the young Augustine being pursued at night by his father, heavy breathing and the beam of a flashlight bobbing up and down behind him through the dense woods nearby his childhood home. This is the scene that Augustine returns through throughout the book, not remembering even the next morning whether it actually happened or was a dream. There are also large gaps in his memory of his boyhood, most notably of his relationship with his father. By day, the woods were simply the woods, a simple bucolic scene next to the home where a boy and his parents lived. Out there in the woods, the trees were thick and they were tall, obscuring the sky. Even on the brightest summer day, you could see only flashes of blue. The trees were greedy, hoarding all the light for themselves at the top of the canopy, letting only a pittance shine through. So either the trees were blocking the moon, or perhaps clouds were, a layer of them like a floating sheet. The scene by day is almost enough to negate the nightmare, until one day Augustine wakes up and goes downstairs, where his university professor father is bent over grading papers, and Augustine spies a green pine needle still stuck in his hair. The reader becomes a witness to horrendous but infrequent physical abuse of Augustine. But it is the small acts of daily cruelty from father to son that resound the hardest. At one point, the young Augustine dresses up like a dog in an effort to receive some positive attention from his father, only to be rebuffed again. Well, it is true that this book certainly is not funny. Readers of Augustine Burroughs can now witness how he cultivated a steely hatred that he would later fine-tune into a vengeful wit. His turning point begins with a guinea pig named Ernie, who lives in an aquarium in Augustine's room. Augustine's mother once again flees with Augustine in tow, telling her son that his father is dangerous and it is not safe to be around him, but promises that his father will take care of Ernie. Augustine was devoted to Ernie. He chose him at the pet store because he wanted a pet that was fuzzy and that he could snuggle with. And he cultivated a close relationship with Ernie, learning to identify his squeals, such as when he wanted to run around on the floor. When he and his mother return home after a week, his father greets him with a curious look on his face. And after his son discovers Ernie dead with no food or water in his aquarium that is now filthy, the father says, "Did you say hello to Ernie?" Augustine narrates his reaction. "And it began, hate unspoiled within my chest, hate bloomed within me, unfurling like the supple petals of deadly flower, oleander, foxglove. My childhood was over now. A part of me had died. But another part was born, and I knew that whatever badness my father had within him, I had within me too. Before, I was afraid that I might grow up to be like him. Now I knew that I already was, because what he had done to Ernie, I knew I could do to him. My father did not deserve to breathe." Augustine concludes A Wolf at the Table by fast-forwarding through his life. He racked up achievements in his late teens and early 20s as an advertising copywriter, trying to gain paternal praise that was never forthcoming. During the same period, he lived in squalor, his Manhattan apartment filled with stacks of old magazines and empty liquor bottles, in the period that predated his stint in a rehab and the writing of his subsequent intense memoir, Dry. In some ways, the ending of A Wolf at the Table is a disappointment. Augustine never gets what he wants from his father. There is never a kind word, even at the end of the father's life. Augustine also does not regain his absent memories. But Augustine does let us in on the window that he has opened into his own life, that regardless of where life takes him, there is always this yearning inside of him for a father's love, the love that he never received. As I reflect on this, it transmutes from disappointment into a haunting insight to my own unresolved endings, as different as they are. The fact is that all too often we do not receive the happy ending that we may wish for, despite all the ways that we have of fooling ourselves. Sometimes there is no closure, only an opening. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer literature and life for This Way Out.
So, you don't want to miss a week of This Way Out's global news reports, being introduced to terrific new music by openly LGBT artists, hearing about a new hit movie even before the buzz begins. The answer is a subscription to This Way Out. You can have our programs on CD or audio cassette delivered right into your mailbox, and for much less than the cost of a newspaper subscription. For easy how-to information, just log on to thiswayout.org or email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us for more information at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
The subtle twists and turns of orientation and relationship power the plot of Australian writer Jeffrey J. Fowler's play, Hope is the Saddest. This Way Out Brisbane correspondent John Frame chats with Fowler about the ramifications of his themes and about queer life in Perth.
I can't forget you. Ever since the moment that I met you, you've been on my mind and I need to somehow let you know that I think about you all the time. So when you think about love, think about me. I can give you more than you'll ever need. Sooner or later, every heart needs some company. When you think about love, think about me. When you think about love, think about me.
The Hope is the Saddest has a gay context. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. Well, Hope is the Saddest, apart from being the story of a young, avid Dolly Parton fan, which I guess in its own way has some relation to the gay community. It's about a young gay guy and a woman who find that they have a deep affection for each other, and navigating that kind of territory where perhaps you might wish someone wasn't gay, or perhaps you might wish you weren't gay, and the lead character... I mean, it's kind of an alternative universe as well as having real relevance to our world, but the main character feels that the music of Dolly Parton will convert the gay love of her life to a straight man.
Mm.
It's, you know, it's actually a lot of fun, and the audiences that we've had have all laughed and enjoyed it a lot, but that's not to say it's trivial. There's definitely substance in it and some certain darkness brought in by a third character, not in the relationship, called Marion, who is kind of the antithesis of the lead character, Hope, and she's very dark, and she doesn't like Dolly Parton, and it's a big problem in the play.
Right. There is an element to this regarding the possibility, the remote possibility, that same-sex attracted men or women could find just the right person who's opposite sex to them, with whom everything would work. Do you think it's a good thing for the general public to constantly be aware of this?
No, I think that the most important thing is that the gay community is accepted, and accepted as a natural thing and a normal part of society. And I think that when people keep these hopes that people can change, or even this slight expectation that people can change, then there's the pressure for them to do it. least the people that you want to have accept you still have in their mind on some level, oh, but it is a possibility that you could change, or it can be maneuvered around, and they'll just keep hoping for that rather than accepting the reality. And though, of course, there are people that could find themselves in a happy relationship with a person of the gender they don't sexually prefer, I don't think that society should be gunning for that or hoping for that or thinking about that. I think we should be accepting it the way it is.
Mm. And there's also the truism, I believe, that even if it was a choice to be same-sex attracted, then that should be respected. That's just as valid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you find, even in Perth, which is a big enough town, when if someone finds out, you go, oh, do you know such and such?
Oh, absolutely.
You do.
But in Perth, to be honest, when people say to you, do you know such and such, the reality is that you probably do.
Yeah.
There's one gay pub and one gay club, and they actually just have the same clientele, and everyone really does know everyone, and I don't know how different that would be in Brisbane.
Okay. And for Eastern State people, so Brisbane folk who want to discover how fantastic it is to see the sun come up and down on another side of the ocean, and with a time of day, can you thoroughly recommend that Perth is a nice, friendly place to be a gay man and to tour as a gay man?
No, I can't. it's a great city when you find the right places, and a very beautiful city with beautiful sunsets and a lot of lovely people, but a lot of people that move to Perth get absolute culture shock, are freaked out by the people here, the bogans here, the gay club and the gay pub in an area commonly referred to as the ghetto, and it really lives by its name of being a dangerous place to be at night. And I wouldn't recommend Perth to a lot of people.
Okay. Well, maybe if you have friends there in advance.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, I've got wonderful friends here, and it's one of the reasons I tour work rather than reallocating. There's a huge problem in Western Australia of this mass exodus of artists that we all train here at Whopper or at the School of Contemporary Art, and then everyone suddenly feels they need to go to the Eastern States to live, to be able to make art a viable career, and it's probably true on a level, but I possibly couldn't do that because of my friends here, a great life I do have here, but at the same time I feel that people from outside who haven't grown up here could find it quite difficult. It is a big country town, there's no going about that.
That was Perth-based Hope is the Saddest playwright Jeffrey J. Fowler in cross-continental conversation with John Frame in Brisbane. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Dustin Richardson, Janet Mason and John Frame contributed program material, Dolly Parton performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out operating expenses are funded by charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to help keep us on the air. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of all our programs there. To receive weekly email alerts describing the content of each This Way Out, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening on WTND Macomb, Illinois, Free Radio San Diego, San Diego, California, CKUW Winnipeg, Manitoba, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Perhaps you've never made a contribution to KPFT before. Please, give me a moment to explain why your gift matters. At its heart, KPFT is a grassroots organization. Yes, we get some money from the federal government, and you hear the names of many individuals that support KPFT. But it's the contributions of 50 or 100 that add up to the most important portion of our operating budget. That's because when thousands of you give what you can, your collective voices become more powerful than that of any other single source of income, including the federal government. Your gifts come with no strings attached. They're free from commercial or political influence. That's what makes them vital to our future. So please, make your first ever gift to KPFT. Call 713-526-5738 and do it right now. It does really make a difference to the future of our community radio. Thank you.
And we're coming up to the end of the show and your last opportunity to make a pledge to KPFT. Let's go out to the lobby and see where we are.
Hey, guys. Well, I have been keeping a tally here. And by the way, we do have a goal of $700. And we can make it if we're just a bit optimistic and aggressive in getting our listeners to call in the next few minutes and give us a donation. So far, we have reached $555. And a lot of that go to the it's because of the people who I thanked earlier. But also, one person I have not had the opportunity to give a huge thank you for a huge donation is Gary. $150. Used a fantastic plastic, so it's money on the table, as people would say.
Thank
so,
you, Gary.
So, again, we just want to encourage people to call 713-526-5738 and help us out.
Great. And you still have time. In fact, you can call anytime you want at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. We want to thank everybody who's pledged for the program tonight and everybody who's pledged and made their fulfillment for the entire station, because it's a joint effort. We all work here together to try to provide good programming to this station, to be able to cover things that aren't being covered by other radio stations or other media outlets in the city. And in fact, that's a pretty big void nowadays. Things like local news, things like discussion forums that we don't have on the other media outlets. And, you know, some of them do some good jobs in doing reporting, and they do wonderful jobs about reporting about storms. But what about reporting about things that they don't report? Things like what's going down on city council, what's going on in the community, what's going on in the backyard. And also, KPFT provides a lot of good entertainment value because of music that you don't hear on the other commercial radio stations. You know, we don't just play the top 40 songs, or more likely the top 10 songs. We played an incredible variety of music that you can't hear anywhere else.
Well, and you can't hear anywhere else Queer Music Heritage, which will be the second half of next week's show. And J.D. Doyle is the quintessential expert on queer music and has a collection that is second to none. And he does this next show is just as good as all of them.
It's sort of an odds and ends show. It's things that he couldn't quite find a theme for, but new music that he did want to play and let people know about it.
So that's the thing. Our community has so much talent and quality in what goes on, and this is an outlet for it. This show specifically, this station, we give everyone that opportunity, and we represent the GLBT community here on Queer Voices. We're your voice of the community, and help us out. I ask you to give us a call. Call and pledge. You have a few minutes left, and even when we go off the air, if you'll just call in and pledge and tell them it's for Queer Voices, it works just the same way. So call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT.
So we'll be back next week, but then the week out, we'll take 2 weeks off because of the conventions. We're being preempted.
Those political conventions.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Them rescue Republicans and those wonderful people.
We'll be hearing alternative coverage that you won't hear on the major networks on Pacifica. So thank you very much for joining us. We want to thank our guest tonight, Paul Simmons from the Center for AIDS, Kelly McCain from the AIDS Foundation, and Ray Hill, who just sort of wanders in here sometimes.
Yes, but he's having a film festival this Friday.
Yes, and it's at the Rice Media Center. You can go to ricecinema.rice.edu/events. It sounds very, very good. So check that out this weekend.
Absolutely.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
It's the creative use of sound to transport you from your home or car to a desert in the Middle East or the middle of a concert hall. It's refined radio for people who want to be engaged by stories and music, minus the shock value that commercial media often uses to try to get your attention. At KPFT, the bottom line isn't profit, it's public service. And that's why we're asking for your gift today, to help keep KPFT on the air. You can do that by giving a gift that reflects the value you receive from KPFT and that fits your budget. Our volunteers can help you decide when you call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-5738. You can also give on our secure website at kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
I'm Ray Hill. This is radio station KPFT Houston. We're a listener-sponsored radio station, and we depend on their listeners to make contributions. I've been around here since 1968, and hell, we didn't get a transmitter until 1970. And I went on the air in 1975 with the gay show. In 1980, I started the prison show. Continuous broadcasting on public radio means that I frequently ask folks just like you to make contributions, tax-deductible contributions, to the radio station. And you can do that on this program. Listen for the number and give it a call.
You're listening to...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.